This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. And tonight's guest, Herbert E. Alexander, director of the Citizens Research Foundation. Tonight's subject, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Princeton, New Jersey, is Dr. Herbert E. Alexander, director of the Citizens Research Foundation. Dr. Alexander is a noted political scientist and was executive director of President Kennedy's Commission on Campaign Costs in 1961 and 62. He has written extensively on matters relating to money and politics. If you'd like to ask Dr. Alexander a question or make a comment on tonight's topic, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, Night People, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call operators are on duty. Our Night Call lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Dr. Alexander, how much money does it cost to run our two-party system here in the United States?
The cost of elections in the United States, of course, varies depending on the year, a presidential election year. The costs are much higher than in a non-election year, such as 1965. In congressional election years, costs are increased over the non-election years, but are not as high as in presidential years. In 1964, the costs of running our parties and candidates in the United States ran about $200 million. This is a small increase over the amount spent on political activities in 1960, when the cost ran about $175 million spent on behalf of candidates for public office at all levels. Now, this covers offices from the White House to the courthouse.
Now, $200 million is a lot of money, Dr. Alexander. Where does all this money come from?
Well, $200 million is really not a lot of money if you consider the amount that is spent in this country on chewing gum or on cosmetics or in other ways, some of which are frivolous. Here, we are talking about spending $200 million as a form of tuition for the education of the American people on issues confronting the country. We are talking about domestic issues in our politics. We are talking about foreign issues in our politics. And the money that is spent is for the purpose, hopefully, of enlightening the American people, of making a dialogue possible which sustains our democracy. So that I don't think that $200 million in a presidential election year is a great deal.
Well, it's still a lot of money to the average political party, Doctor. Where does all this money come from?
It's true that it is a lot of money to the major political parties. Money, political money, is difficult to raise. Many politicians and political leaders are anxious to raise the necessary funds to put on the kinds of campaigns that they think are necessary to win elections. It's extremely difficult to raise the money. Really, only in the last decade or so has there been much effort to broaden the base of political campaigns. At the time of the turn of the century, there were perhaps only a handful of contributors to each major party. This has grown through the years to the point where in 1964 there were about 10 or 11 million contributors, mostly to the two major parties and candidates of those two major parties at all levels in this country.
How many voters do we have in the United States, Doctor?
Well, in a presidential election year, there were in 1960 about 69 million voters, and in 1964, about 70 million voters.
So what, about 10% or a little bit better of the actual people that vote give to a political party?
About one out of seven, you might say. When we say 10%, we're talking about 10% of the national adult civilian population.
I see.
Not necessarily all voters, and not necessarily all eligible to vote in the various states.
Well, who gives money, Dr. Alexander? I mean, is it an individual, or is it a corporation, or a union?
Well, traditionally, individuals have given substantial sums to the political parties. Corporations, under federal law, corporations are prohibited from contributing to political activities. And under federal law, labor unions are prohibited from contributing. Therefore, we need to rely on contributions of individuals. Now, some of those individuals may be members of labor unions or may be members of management in corporations, but clearly many individuals are not identified with either business or labor, but contribute on the notion that it is necessary in this democracy to sustain our politics, to contribute to the party of one's choice. Much of the money in the past has come in large sums, defined as contributions of $500 or more. Of course, the amount varies with the level of candidacy. In a presidential election, a $500 contribution may not seem as large as it would in a campaign for state legislature or a campaign for mayor in a small town. Money, of course, is raised from individuals, but in different ways. Fundraising dinners and fundraising events, ranging from banquets to clam bakes, are held throughout the country by the various parties and candidates. And in the past decade or so, fundraising dinners have become a major source of funds for the parties and candidates. Now, the price per ticket to fundraising events varies, but often it is as high as $100 a ticket. There have been political breakfasts and such, at which the price of entrance has been as high as $5,000 per ticket.
Why do people give to political parties?
I have, through the years, interviewed many large contributors, many of the so-called, quote, fat cats, unquote.
What's a fat cat, by the way?
Well, a fat cat is considered as an individual who contributes in sums of $500 or more to a party or candidate.
Are there many fat cats in the U.S.?
Well, I don't have a precise count for 1964. A thorough study, an exhaustive study that was done in 1952, indicated that there were about 20,000 contributors in sums of $500 or more in that year. I would guess that that number has increased given the American affluence since 1952 to the point where in 1964 there were perhaps 30 or 40 or perhaps even 50,000 individuals who contributed in sums of $500 or more.
Our guest tonight, Dr. Herbert E. Alexander, from the Citizens Research Foundation. Our topic, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight on Night Call, Dr. Herbert E. Alexander, and he's director of the Citizens Research Foundation. And our topic on Night Call, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice. If you'd like to join us here on Night Call and express your opinion on our topic, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice, or maybe you think a person shouldn't contribute, give us a call here at Night Call. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges if you wish. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. What do you think about giving to a political party? Do you think people should do this or they shouldn't? Let's hear from you here on Night Call. Dr. Alexander, in a little booklet that your outfit puts out called Money for Politics, there's a report by Professor Alexander Hurd in there. Would you care to comment on Professor Hurd's report?
Professor Hurd wrote an exhaustive study of money in politics in the United States, which was published in 1960, and which covers all aspects of political finance, how money is raised, how it is handled, and how it is spent. And it is considered in the context of the American political system and American society. Professor Hurd undertook studies in the early 1950s, some of which were quite interesting. For example, he showed that of the 100 corporations in the United States with greatest total assets in 1953, that officers or directors connected with 66 had contributed to Republican campaign funds. Those connected with two corporations are given solely to the Democrats, 24 to both major parties, and 8 to none. Now, times have changed a bit. In 1964, we have just concluded some studies here at Citizens Research Foundation, which indicated that the Democrats nationally are faring much better, receiving more large contributions than they did during the 1950s, that they are receiving money from individuals, many of whom are in the business community, many of whom are connected with the large corporations in this country. The Democrats at present seem to have the best of all worlds. They tend to get money that is collected by labor unions on behalf of the rank and file members of the labor unions, and the tendency is for labor money to go to Democratic Party and candidates. But in 1964, given the appeal of President Johnson to many elements of the population, the Democrats received considerable money from sources that had nominally, traditionally in the past, been Republican.
In 1956, Senator Albert Gore, I believe, headed up a committee, and it seems to me that they found that there were 12 families, American families, that gave practically over $1 million, and that 90% of this went to the Republican Party. Does this say anything? Is this a danger, this type of giving, do you feel? In other words, where 12 families more or less could give 90% of what they gave to one political party.
Well, again, the conditions have changed since the Gore Committee report in 1956. At that time, as you say, over $1 million had been contributed by members of 12 selected wealthy American families. In 1964, we have just completed this same analysis, which showed that only about $500,000 had been contributed by members of these same families in 1964. Moreover, much more of the money which was contributed, a larger proportion of the money in 1964 went to Democrats than had been the case in 1956. So that the climate is changing, and much of the traditional large contribution money is now going to Democrats throughout the country.
Could it be that many people give because they feel that there's a certain amount of influence that they have if they give to the right party or the in party?
Well, there's no doubt that the party in power has an advantage in raising money. There are always some individuals with axes to grind, some individuals who seek goodwill of the party in power, some individuals who seek access to officials in an administration, whether it's at the national level, state, or local. On the other hand, and this is to get back to an earlier question, Russ, I've talked through the years with many contributors, and I find that many of them are sincerely interested in a point of view, believe that the Democratic Party or that the Republican Party is best for the country, that its policies will move us further along toward the road to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And many individuals contribute relatively large sums of money without having any special interest in seeking influence, in seeking favors, in seeking jobs.
Dr. Alexander, I have a caller in Baltimore, Maryland now, a listener on WBAL, Mr. John Oster. Hello, John. Speak right up. You're on night call, sir.
Hi.
Your comment, please.
Well, what I wanted to talk to Dr. Alexander about was the comment concerning the British, in Great Britain, as I understand it,
the government contributes to any political campaign. In other words, the individual person.
John, can you speak up, please?
Beg pardon?
Can you speak a little louder, please?
All right, I'm sorry. I guess I better turn off the radio.
Okay.
I wanted to speak about the fact that in Great Britain, as I understand it, any individual running for political office posts a bond for a certain amount of money, and then the government contributes to his campaign. And I'd like to hear Dr. Alexander's comment as to how this might work in our political system.
Dr. Alexander?
I heard the question, Russ, and I'll be glad to comment on it. I believe the caller is a bit wrong. What happens in the British system is that the individual does post a bond when he runs for election. When he is a candidate of one of the parties, he receives a free mailing at the cost of the government to his constituents. That is the equivalent of the man running for United States Senator or member of Congress could make a free mailing to each member of his constituency. The National Party also receives free time on the BBC, on the British Broadcasting Company. However, there are no other subsidies in the British system. Other countries, however, do have subsidies. The West German government now provides subsidies to the parties, and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, just south of us, has a system of subsidies. Subsidies have been advocated in this country, in the United States, since 1907, when President Theodore Roosevelt suggested them in his annual message to the Congress. However, since that time, there has not been sustained interest. There has not been a great deal of support for subsidies in this country. I think that much of the discussion in recent years has taken the form of indirect subsidies in this country rather than direct payment of amounts of money to parties and candidates. One means of indirect subsidy is through tax deductions or credits for political contributions. And this was one of the recommendations that was made by the President's Commission on Campaign Costs.
John?
Well, now, I think Theodore White, who wrote The Making of the President in 1964, was recently interviewed by a national magazine syndicate, and he indicated that perhaps the problem could be partially alleviated by having an appropriation made for both major parties for these television costs, which seem to be a substantial part of any national campaign.
Doctor?
In the United States, the only national campaign is the presidential. And, of course, in the presidential campaign, broadcast costs are very high. In 1964, the Goldwater campaign spent over $5 million on political broadcasting, and the Democratic campaign probably just a bit under $5 million. So we're talking about $10 million just on political broadcasting. This, of course, could be subsidized by the federal government if the Congress would appropriate the money. However, I don't believe that there are enough members of Congress at the present time who would be willing to vote for appropriations to the parties to sustain political broadcasting in this country.
John, it's time for our station break. I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Don Oster from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL.
Our guest tonight on Night Call, Dr. Herbert E. Alexander, and he's director of the Citizens Research Foundation. Our topic, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb.
Our topic on Night Call, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice. Our guest tonight is Dr. Herbert E. Alexander, and he's director of the Citizens Research Foundation, an outfit that does a lot of work on how political money is spent and who spends it and why they spend it. Now, if you have a comment or a question that you'd like to ask of Dr. Alexander, give us a call here at Night Call. Our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Please make that call station to station. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Dr. Alexander, can a man of little or no wealth really enter public life today and win an election?
Well, there's no doubt that a wealthy individual has an advantage in American politics. On the other hand, we have numerous recent examples of individuals who did not have the benefit of wealth who rose to high eminence in American politics.
But did they have to sell themselves, maybe, to other people that did have money to back them?
Well, I don't believe so. I don't believe that one would think that either Richard Nixon or Hubert Humphrey had sold himself to any special interest in the process of rising through the United States Senate to the vice presidency of the United States.
Of course, both men are very political animals.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe they, do you think possibly they have a greater allegiance to party because of this dependence on the party's money?
I think there may be some element of that. I think that one thing that can be pointed out is that the party helps out the candidate usually after he has received the nomination, so that the advantage of wealth is more apparent in the nomination phase. That is, when a Hubert Humphrey has to oppose a John Kennedy in a primary election in Wisconsin or West Virginia. There, clearly, Kennedy had the advantage because he had wealth behind him.
Is this a healthy situation in a democracy?
Well, it's not healthy, but so far we've been able to continue the system in which individuals like Nixon and Humphrey have been able to rise through it. The effect of money in politics is probably more certain in determining who the candidates will be than in determining the outcome of elections. But the influence of money is not always obvious. For example, the successful candidate may have won because he was able to spend more money, or he may have attracted more money because he was more likely to win. The more popular candidate is apt to attract not only more votes, but also more money. Many individuals like to put their money on the what appears to be the winning horse, with the result that if a man is attractive, if he has a political program which will be acceptable to large numbers of voters, I think that he can propel himself through the political maze in this country. But again, there is no question but that the rich, the wealthy candidate has a special advantage in getting particularly the nomination, where many political leaders in conventions or otherwise are willing to give the nomination to a well-to-do person who can finance their own campaigns or who can contribute heavily to their own campaigns, and thus the convention or the political leaders do not have to worry so much about where the next dollar is coming from.
Well, Dr. Alexander, it doesn't necessarily follow that a rich man is a good man. Now, how does a little man, we'll say a poor man, become involved in politics? How does he stand a chance? I mean, obviously he has a point of view. I guess the majority of us would classify ourselves as either poor or middle class. How do we get representation in government then under the present system of paying for elections?
Well, first, I'd like to make one point that at the presidential level and at some of the senatorial and gubernatorial levels in this country, we've been very fortunate in having had wealthy individuals who were good political servants, who were dedicated men of service to the common good. I mentioned Franklin Roosevelt, I mentioned John Kennedy, I mentioned Nelson Rockefeller, and William Scranton, and other wealthy individuals. But you ask about the small fella. The person with limited means can participate in politics in many ways. He can belong to the party organization in his ward or precinct, in his town or county. He can participate by interesting others in voting, in getting them to register. He can participate by contributing to the party of his choice. Many individuals in this country contribute $1 or $2 or $5 to the party or candidate of their choice. And the effort in this country, in both political parties in the past decade or so, has been to broaden the base of political contributing. The Republicans have a neighbor-to-neighbor campaign in many areas of the country, which is a door-to-door drive to raise money in small sums for Republicans. The Democrats, since the early 1950s, have had a Dollars for Democrats program. These programs have been relatively successful in some areas of the country. In other areas, they have not been. But clearly, there has been substantial success over the years in broadening the base. I think that there's been more association of contributing as a civic duty. Public-spirited individuals are learning that it is necessary to sustain our political system through contributions to one of the major parties.
Yet the great majority of the electorate here in the United States do not give money to a political party. Isn't that correct?
Well, it's true that the great majority do not. I think that there's some cynicism about political money. There's some feeling that political money is dirty. I think there's some feeling that The necessary money is supplied by the wealthy candidate or by the large contributor or by the labor union, and therefore it isn't necessary for each individual to contribute. However, I think there are many myths about political money that we in our studies have learned that the wealthy candidate normally does not supply all the money, cannot usually supply all the money that's necessary for a campaign, that large contributors do donate substantial amounts, but that more money is needed than they are able to contribute, that labor unions, members of labor unions collectively do not supply the amounts of money that are necessary. Therefore, more and more individuals are learning, getting in the habit of contributing. I think that part of the problem has been that the parties have only in the past decade learned to ask many individuals to contribute. Public opinion polls have shown that a very small proportion of the population is ever asked to contribute. Once an individual is asked, the chances are that he may give, particularly if he is asked by a friend, by a member of the family, or by a neighbor. So that it might be possible to organize broad solicitation.
Once a fella gives a dollar, we'll say, to a political party, does he tend to vote for that party that he gave the buck to?
Oh, there's no doubt that once he has contributed money, he has a sort of investment in the outcome of the election. On the other hand, we do find that many of the individuals who contribute are people who are otherwise active in politics, who participate in other ways. They participate by volunteering their time and also by contributing their money. They go to rallies and speeches and they ring doorbells, and they also contribute their money. But many individuals contribute money who do not participate.
Dr. Alexander, it's been suggested, and it seems to a lot of people hold the view, that labor unions are the biggest influence, are the largest contributors to political parties in the United States. Do unions give more money to political activities, or do corporations?
Well, as I indicated before, Russ, under federal law, corporations and labor unions are prohibited from contributing. However, individuals who are who work for corporations, of course, as American citizens, can contribute, and individuals who are members of labor unions can contribute. Now, labor unions organize what they call committees on political education. These committees seek money from union members voluntarily. Unions cannot use union dues money for political activities, but unions can establish and do establish separate committees and then seek a dollar or $5 or whatever a member of the union is willing to contribute. In that way, they build up in the union substantial funds, which then are either contributed to various candidates that the union endorses, or that the political the committee on political education endorses, or the unions sometimes carry on parallel activities. That is, they themselves buy time on radio or TV station. They themselves print literature on behalf of the candidate and circulate it.
Do corporations do anything similar?
No. Corporations are prohibited from contributing at the federal level, but in some states, of course, both labor unions and corporations can contribute to non-federal offices, that is, to candidates for state or local offices, which are not directly federal offices.
Our guest tonight, Dr. Herbert E. Alexander. He's director of the Citizens Research Foundation. Our topic, why a person should contribute to the party of his choice. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America. Busy America. Busy making money. Busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where do you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest is Dr. Herbert Alexander. Our topic, why you should give to the political party of your choice. And if you'd like to call or make a comment on politics and particularly giving to politics, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Dr. Alexander, I have a caller in Indiana, in Wellington, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Mr. Richard Moby. Hello, Dick. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Yes, Russ. Doctor,
yes.
I'd like to know, are political contributions, anything that we give to a political party of our choice, are they tax deductible?
At the present time, political contributions are not tax deductible in any way under federal income tax. However, four states do permit deductibility for political contributions. Those states are Minnesota, California, Hawaii, and Missouri. There have been many proposals for making political contributions deductible under the federal income tax system. A bill in 1964 passed the Senate that would have achieved that, but the bill did not pass the House, and therefore they are not presently tax deductible.
How soon do you think it might come about that it will be tax deductible?
It's very difficult to predict. I think it is a problem of getting the legislation through the House of Representatives. The Senate has indicated that it would favor this feature.
Well, if a person had, say, a great amount of money that he would like to donate to a political party, I mean, like in the thousands of dollars.
Yes.
You said there are only four states. If he moved to one of these states, would that be advisable?
No, I don't believe he would find it advisable for the reason that in each of those states, in three of the four states, contributions up to $100 can be deducted from state income tax. Now, state income tax rates are rather low, much lower than federal income tax rates, with the result that the financial benefit which the individual gets from such contributions is not great, even in those four states. But I think that you've hit upon an important point,
which is that tax deductions or tax credits for political contributions are an indication of government encouragement of the act of contributing. I think that they tend to dignify the act of political contributing. I think they're a good sales tool to be used by party members who ask others to contribute, and therefore, in the past, I have suggested and have hoped that the Congress of the United States would pass legislation that would make them deductible under the federal income tax.
Do you find that people who do donate to a political party either go way overboard in donating or are very small contributions? Like, would the majority give like $100 or $5?
Well, of course, the majority of Americans probably can't afford or isn't interested in politics to the point of contributing hundreds of dollars. On the other hand, as Russ pointed out previously, there are many individuals who give in the thousands of dollars. In 1964, our records here at the foundation indicate some individuals give $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. But many individuals, many labor union members may feel able only to give a dollar or $2.
I notice I never hear, I haven't heard in a lot of campaign speeches or things like that, they very seldom ask for donations. Is that true?
I think you'll find more and more that candidates and parties are asking. In fact, they're even asking over radio and television in the last few minutes of a broadcast. Often an appeal is made for funds. In 1964, the Goldwater programs ended almost invariably with an appeal for funds, and they were quite successful in drawing in large numbers of small contributions. Then, in some states in the country, at political rallies, the hat is passed. And there are other ways. At clan bakes, you know, a dollar or two may be charged. And this is a form of passing the hat.
Well, people are more apt to give at passing the hat rather than to watch a broadcast on television and have whoever's campaigning say, please send a contribution. And I know if you were at a rally, you'd be more apt to just take out a dollar or $5 out of your pocket rather than to go to the trouble of mailing a check or...
Well, I agree. You have to write out the check, and you have to catch the address where to send it, and you have to make out the envelope and put on the stamp, and it's some bother.
Mr. Moby, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. We have other callers waiting. Thank you, sir. Mr. Moby, listener on WFBN out in Indiana. And, Doctor, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Norma Harper. Good evening, Mrs. Harper. Your comment, please.
Yes. I do hope the gentleman won't mind if I state that I'm a little bit idealistic about the election campaign, and I would hope that the ideal situation would come about that a popular choice of the people at large would finally be arrived at, and by means, instead of having huge turning this into a huge campaign for funds, the public media would be able to spontaneously devote enough free time to let people be heard without spending thousands of dollars and using money as a coercive force. And I do hope this doesn't shock the people who listen to this. And I would hope the Electoral College would be more equalized. And I just wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think that there are some problems in the media giving free time. You recognize that there is a Section 315 of the Federal Communications Act, which is the equal time provision, which requires that if a broadcaster, either a radio station or a television station, gives time
to a candidate for an office, it must give equal time or offer equal time to all candidates for that same office.
Dr. Alexander,
yes,
we're going to be talking about that tomorrow night on Night Call. That very topic, can free speech be broadcast?
Very good.
And I don't want to take you too long, but I just want to make this other comment. As I say, I'm hoping that the day will arrive when the Electoral College will be more equalized and will be a more spontaneous choice of candidates.
Do you think that the Electoral College, Mrs. Harper, is outdated then?
Well, I don't know. That's what I wonder. You know, it seems to be getting away from the will of the people more than I personally would like. And, I'd like to hear some more comments on that. And I appreciate your letting me voice my opinion on this.
You're most welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling Night Call, Mrs. Norma Harper, Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Dr. Alexander, do you want to comment on Mrs. Harper's last statement there about the Electoral College?
Well, I think that the Electoral College has been designed to reflect the popular vote as much as possible, given our state boundaries. And when an individual who is elected as a presidential elected does not vote for the individual who wins the popular vote in that state, there's a great outcry. I don't know that we need more independence. People think, and I think, that what we need is a true reflection of the vote in this country, of the popular vote in this country, in the Electoral College.
Doctor, we have a minute remaining. I wonder if, in that minute, if you could tell me what suggestions you would make for a better political system as far as getting money for these political systems in the United States?
Well, I've already talked about tax benefits for political contributions. I think that they would dignify the process, and I think that many more individuals would be willing to contribute if they could claim tax deduction or tax credit for their contributions. I also believe that there should be better disclosure and publicity laws relating to campaign funds that would give the people better knowledge of sources of contributions and kinds of expenditures. There is a federal public reporting law with many loopholes, and most of the states have forms of public reporting. However, I believe that the public misunderstands a great deal about political finance, and that with more effective public reporting would come broader enlightenment and knowledge about money in politics.
Doctor,
in the American system.
I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
Well, thank you, Russ. It's been a pleasure.
Our guest tonight was Dr. Herbert E. Alexander, and he's director of the Citizens Research Foundation. Our topic was why a person should contribute to the party of his choice. Tomorrow night on Night Call, our guest will be Mr. John D.J. Pemberton. He's executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union. Our topic, can free speech be broadcast? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.